Hi, you're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Well, hi, and thanks for joining us today on Boggy Talk. How are you all?
I'm doing great. It's mid-May and doing great.
Mid-May.
Yeah.
Good.
Did you guys have a good Mother's Day?
Of course.
Or not you. Did your wives have a good Mother's Day?
Yeah, Christy massaged my feet.
That's right.
Cooked for me for Mother's Day.
I always give the kids the preemptive text nudge of, guys, remember that this is your day. No, it's not not my responsibility to celebrate your mom. I will, because I know you won't fully do it. But
remind everybody.
Yeah, they always do something. Hopefully it'll continue to grow over the years.
Yeah.
Mature and understand how much their mom does. My word. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Christy doesn't like to plan or, you know, so we just kind of wait and see what she wants to do that day. You know,
how she feels.
What about you? Yeah. What is your Mother's Day?
Great.
I mean, Chris Brown is probably like pulling out all the stops because he's
romantic guy. So when you live close to everybody
everybody.
Is my dad's birthday is on Mother's Day too.
Oh, wow.
And so that always is interesting because he gets like the short end of the stick because it's like, sorry. So we used to always get together, but then that was stressful because there were just a ton of people and we're like trying to feed all these people with my side of the family. So then just the moms started just going out to lunch together. Yeah.
Aww. So there's like free lunches places, right? Like Tijuana Flat, Sunny's.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah,
really?
For free, yeah.
Okay.
Places.
Yeah, we just
That's what every mom is like. Take me to Sunny's.
But both of those places serve alcohol, so there's probably people in your family that won't let you go in those restaurants.
This is true, right? Yes. Yes, they will not darken the doors.
That's funny.
And then Chris usually hangs out with his parents, and then we try to. But then this year, it was see my dad and do all the things. So it's cool. Crazy day. So, we are talking today about family drift, since we're talking about moms and families. And our sermon series right now, we took a break from Joshua and moved into a series called Drift. And so our Boggy Talk series is kind of just following that same theme. Mm-hmm. And we're talking more about what you've talked about on Sunday and then just kind of applying it a little bit more. So that's what this series is about. So in light of Mother's Day and the timing of it, we're talking about family drift today. So you didn't really get to talk about that too much from the stage, so we'll talk about it more here. What
is it? Imagine your family on a raft in the middle of the ocean, drifting. Who do you push off?
Who do you push off? It's funny, you guys both went there.
Who goes overboard first?
Probably me. Yeah, right. I weigh the most.
Like, we voted dad, you're out.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
That would be, can't even imagine.
I mean, Stephen would dive off as would Ezra, so
absolutely. Yeah. He'd just be swimming the whole time.
Yeah.
What did you ask?
Awful. That sounds awful.
Being on a raft, yeah.
Yeah.
How do families drift?
Oh, wow. I mean, I would say the first reason is lack of intentionality where you want to go. I mean, that happens, I think, usually unintentionally. So lack of intentionality is usually an unintentional choice.
Yeah.
And it just, I do think we talked about this last week, how it just kind of creeps in, and before you know it, this has happened, and you find your place in a place that you realized you never thought you'd be. Mm. Whether that's, it begins with deprioritizing what's most important, making, schedule choices, even just other, even legitimately hard circumstances that can, discourage us.
Yeah.
And, I think we could, talk a lot about those things. But that's where I would start, is that not being intentional.
Yeah. Yeah, them currents are strong.
Ooh,
very
strong.
I think that if you're not intentional, then you could really easily get pulled in some direction, and whether that be, we're, in more progressive places, I think not recognizing how much progressive culture influences children, and then parents often like to go along with that. In our area, I think it's, the kind of success, academics, athletics, those kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, I specifically think that when you're, it's kind of different in different seasons, right?
Yeah.
Like when your children are young, the drift can be towards like just you're exhausted physically.
Yeah. I mean, really, for real.
So like getting your kids ready and all that on Sunday morning, you know, and all that, you just.
You're like, it's not worth it. We'll just stay home this week. Yeah.
And I think specifically when you're in a season of like the kids are sick for like 3 weeks
yeah.
and you miss church for 3 weeks or, you know, whatever it may be, it just kind of gets like, ugh, you get disappointed, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't have people checking in on you, it could just be easy to kind of just drift. And then I think when they're teens, they typically have things they're passionate about or you want for them. And I think that can cause you to drift, you know?
Yeah.
Away from church, away from Bible study, away from, everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, if you think about what you just mentioned about, you know, when they're little, maybe just think of these milestones and those different milestones in our lives where we are really transitioning from one stage to another, like being single, getting married, having kids. Those are significant milestones that can cause us to drift towards or away. And how many people do we know that who like didn't care at all, like about the, they thought they were Christians or said they were Christians, but they weren't involved. And then they have kids and realize, oh, we really need to be in church. Like God uses those things.
He
can use those things, but also that's a hard season. And so it is easy to just use that as it's just so much effort. It's just so much work. It is. Mm-hmm. So I think that is paying attention to those maybe natural transitions in life. And then as a parent, you know, you mentioned teenagers. I think a lot of parents, and I think we all probably have felt this tension at some point, when their kids, we're so worried about our kids like not liking us or like not having a voice in their life that we kind of concede on things sometimes that we shouldn't. And I think that when a child maybe is like, well, I just don't want to go to church, and a parent, I've seen this happen, like, oh, it's okay. And then we start to, that affects the parent and not setting the attention for the child, like say, no, this is a non-negotiable for us. Mm-hmm. And so we are teaching them to elevate other activities and other things above the Lord. Mm-hmm. And it usually happens small, and we're just following their lead.
You know, it's such an interesting thing because culture, even in America, probably until the 50s was the opposite, where like there was such resistance to there was such like admiration for ancestors and history and legacy,
family.
And then there became this cultural shift where probably for a little while it was more central focused, but probably beginning with baby boomers having children, you know, they became very like focused on my goal is to give these kids a great life, you know, and their affirmation and those kind of things. And it really has become, and you know, you could see this on social media, like, man, people really like they are living for giving their kids what they would say is a good life, the best, you know, and that looks different, you know, and incomes change, but ultimately that's what it is, you know. And
there was more of a norm of like that Sunday. I mean, you talk about culturally too, like everything shut down, stores weren't open, like certainly didn't have games and things like that. So
back
it was
in
like
the culture,
and so it was just like Sunday. That was like what everybody did, whether you were like truly, you know, following the Lord or not. But you were at least in church. Even I don't know if you guys. You didn't grow up in church, but it was like, unless we had like a raging fever or throwing up, we were in church. Like,
oh, yeah,
it did not matter.
You
know? Yeah. I just remember my dad be like, no, we're going. And even I'm like a little way more lax than he was about any of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it does drift over.
Yeah.
I think, too, like you guys were talking about the different seasons. I remember friends telling me like, oh, just enjoy when they're little. It's less complicated. You have so much more control. You are their calendar. They're just doing what you do, you know? So if you're already like involved and plugged in, it's just naturally that they're going to be there too. But then as they grow older, you have less control. They have their own life or beginning to. Right. And work schedules, just all those things, you know? And so it's – you're having to then – instill those values back in them. And then especially if they're not completely
yeah
in line with you, yeah, then it's hard,
drawn,
you know,
on their own. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they're even a little bit resistant, or just not, I wouldn't even say resistant, just not quite as passionate yet,
right? Because
whether that's, yeah, that's something right in their heart, or just their, who knows, like there's different reasons. Yeah, it is.
I think you brought up a great point, because we are way more in control when they're young, and like a lot of our families who, you know, have kind of revolved their life around their kid's passion, who's now a teenager, whatever it may be. Well, the parents usually started that.
Yeah.
So, like, mm-hmm, they're like, they that's just funny, love this sport, or they just love this thing. Yeah, because you made them do that for 3 years.
When they're,
you
in know, preschool. Like, they start.
And they may not have objected. Yeah, yeah, seriously. Yeah. Today, mm-hmm, somebody was talking to me about a travel t-ball team, and I'm like,
what?
Mm-hmm. No, for real. And I'm sure somebody's going to hear this and be offended, but like, how ridiculous.
That's so young.
How ridiculous, yeah, you know? Yeah. But like, mm-hmm, you were, you and you found joy, and they found your approval, mm-hmm, in doing that. And so, mm-hmm, so I think it does start like when they're young, recognizing like if God, not just church, you know, if God is going to be important, then I have got to steer the ship,
mm-hmm, yeah,
you know, as a dad, yeah, as a mom. Because if I don't, you know, just the currents are going to pull, and they're, mm-hmm, you know, and again, whatever it may be,
Well, you bring up a good point, that our, like, their occurrence, but it's also that our heart it yeah is in this, and theirs yeah as well. So you were mentioning, like, you know, if we're not focused directly on the right things, I was thinking even maybe not like sports, but other things that people, like academics, like your people can be so serious, oh, about, you know, you yeah need to make sure that, yeah. And then it's like, man, do we really put that much pressure or
right
preparation or mm-hmm purpose or whatever into their spiritual health?
We even do that with like church, like yeah, like scripture memory, which I mean, there's no problem with, I mean, I for scripture
please
memory.
Memorize yeah scripture.
You know, I mean, it's inspired by God, probably yeah for reproof, correction, instruction, and right righteousness, so the man may be equipped for every good work. But, like, it becomes a source of pride in mm a parent versus, like,
true,
a
yeah
relational cultivation, you know, yeah, Deuteronomy 6 and those kind of things. And so, yeah, I yeah think I think if there is idolatry in our heart, mm, we will turn our mm kids into little idols.
Yeah.
That,
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm, and I do think that we struggle to believe God. So remember, the heart, it's mm-hmm evil, unbelieving heart, leads right far away. We struggle to believe, like, you know, that God will provide so we don't tithe, or that God will make our kids successful, you know,
yeah,
so we can't ever let God and church get in the way of, mm-hmm, you know, academics, as you yeah said, like
yeah.
Yeah.
Our hearts are just really good at corrupting everything because yeah they're corrupt. You know, all these things are not inherently evil or bad,
mm-hmm,
but our heart's desire like attaches to them to get what we should be getting from the Lord. Like
right
if we're pursuing and pushing our, even ourselves, let's yeah take our kids out of the equation and let's talk about us. If we are pursuing achievement, like, it's not wrong to want to do your best, do all things into the glory of God, and we should steward. But if I'm trying to get validation out of
right
my achievement, yeah, then I'm going to have the wrong motive, and I'm going to sacrifice things that don't need to be sacrificed to get what the Lord can give me and I should be seeking him for. And so I think it's just our hearts are so good at corrupting everything around
yeah
us to get what we're searching for.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm getting ahead of the notes, but like, it's just so easy to allow those things to cause us to no longer prioritize biblical community.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand it's exam week. Maybe your kid can't go to the youth group that week. We've done that where one of my kids is just so overwhelmed by homework, mm-hmm, that if yeah they went to church that Wednesday, mm-hmm, they were not going to be able to focus.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I get it. But when that becomes the regular,
mm-hmm,
that should cause us to say, yeah, wait,
mm-hmm, yeah,
this isn't, like, I don't want my kid to go to Harvard and not go to
right
church.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's a really good point. Well, and you had mentioned that.
But the world celebrates the kid that goes to Harvard.
Yeah.
Oh,
or,
absolutely,
you know, wins that little $2 yeah trophy ring at the travel tournament. Like, the
yeah
world celebrates that way more yeah than being faithful.
Well, yeah, I think it goes, I think I said this before, but it goes back to specifically with parenting. We focus so much more on the what than the who. And if we would
yeah
think about who we want our kids to be more than what we want them to be, that will determine where we're headed in terms of our our drift. That will give us intention. And we apply that to ourselves. Like, right. In light of who God is and in light of what God wants for my life, like, who do I want to be? Well, I want to be someone that's in my eyes are on him. So that's going to, that's that then informs what I do and informs how I do it if I'm looking at who, like who he is and who he's called, who I want to be in light of who he's called me to be.
Yeah.
So put the who before the what.
Yeah. I cut you off. I'm
sorry.
No, I
cut you off.
And it was Mother's Day on Sunday. And how rude of us. 2 days
no,
later.
No, I'm glad you said that because it goes well into the next part of it. So we talked about unbelief because you had mentioned that earlier. So ultimately, we're just not trusting God. Yeah. You know, that what he says, how he's going to bring about his faithfulness in our family's life. So when we put his kingdom first and his perspective. So biblical community and family drift. We talked, or you talked 2 weeks ago in your sermon about the importance of biblical community for ourselves. How does that correlate with families? I mean, it's, what does that mean to help our families not drift?
I think the church as a whole for the family, and you know, whether the mom, dad, single parent, kids, whatever, is really a support system. It's the structure that's surrounding you that is helping you along in your faith. You know, like Hebrews 10 says that we're how we're building each other up, how we're pushing each other on. And I think of the church as that, like my own insufficiencies as a parent to lead my kids in perfect, you know, and perfectly as a dad, they need to see other men doing that. They need older men. They need younger. They need all that. Same. They need women to do that. They need to see that. It's actually really good for my kids to see how other parents, like to be in their homes and see how they function as a family. One, so maybe they appreciate things that we do a little bit more, but also like, hey, that's great. They actually do that better than my parents, and it's okay. Like, I'm going to maybe do that when I'm a parent. It's okay. But I think this, like, we need this community that's looking out for each other. I mean, I think of it like now in terms of graduation with our oldest, like about to graduate. And I think back over the years here in previous church, like of how many people have poured into him spiritually, who've cheered him on. And, you know, not right now.
It's
I'm too
week,
tired.
Man.
But, but I just think like is he an easy kid to cheer on? Yeah. Cause he's,
I wasn't making
nice
fun
guy.
Of you, by the way.
I will cry.
Cameron graduates, I will be crying. So please cry away,
I'm
Justin.
Too tired for it right now.
Okay. But, I cry more when I'm tired.
That's what I was going to say.
I'm like
say.
A camp kid. I'm like middle school girls, the last night of camp. Like when I'm tired.
No, I just think like, it's just incredible. How many other people have spoken truth over him, to him, called out things, encouraged him, given him opportunities. And it's cool in those moments as a dad to like see other people, because he's also at that age that we all have walked through and will continue to walk through with kids, like where what other people say sometimes weighs more than I, you know, I'm like, but I'm so thankful they're saying it. You know, I just think I don't know how in the world we could do this without the support of the church.
I think absolutely. And I think it comes from parents like helping their children understand what church is. Like, it is a family. It's not like a family. It is family. And I think we've walked away from that in our individualistic society. And I think even like the consumer mentality where like, you know, I think we should be connected to the bigger C church. So it doesn't like we should any kid that's at Niceville or Rocky or Freeport, like, they're going to be around other Christians from other churches. So absolutely. But like, you don't just like, I'm going to go to this church on Sunday and this church on Wednesday and this church when they have this thing, because it's not about entertainment. It's about, it's about the family piece. And that's not always flashy and revolved around them. And, and I think we have to trust God's design for that. Now the church should be responsive to the fact that there are children here and students here and we want to teach them. But I do think so many people even approach church from that consumeristic mindset.
What am I getting?
And that's not really biblical community. That's that's teaching your children the church is about what you can get out of it rather than what God has for you.
And that's a very unhealthy dynamic in a relationship. You know, if you think if you approach a relationship, a friendship with that, or a romantic relationship,
it's narcissistic.
And so that is terrible. Like, that is incredibly unhealthy.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and again, you know, I mean, it's on the parents to teach them. And I think if you don't desire the, mm-hmm. like, you should be regularly in the Word and ask, do I desire the things of the Word? And if you don't, for yourself or your children, then mm-hmm. man, God help me with that. So,
What do we do when we have children that drift from us socially? Ooh. So,
well, my children just want to be around me all the time. I don't know what this guy can't relate to this you question can't
even,
at all.
Like, this is not the same thing, but you can't even like watch a movie together anymore. Yeah, you like look around and everybody's watching their own thing while you have. I'm like, what happened? Yeah.
I think this is harder than ever because of that. And so I think we have to really make space. I mean, this you can't. It's hard to correct this. So you really have to be pretty proactive in setting boundaries and having family time. And hey, we're getting off devices. We're unplugging. We're doing this together, like it or not. And as a parent, you have to also do that, sucking it up, knowing that if you're forcing your family to do this together, that you have to know that the end result is worth all the complaints that you're going to have along the way. And this child doesn't want to do it, but this child, it's going to happen. And you just have to say, you know what? Ultimately, this is worth it. You also do, and especially as your kids get older, you're navigating that space of you do have to give them space to be their own. Yeah. Like, and I don't know. There's probably some principles. There's not like rules you can like say do this. There's not a formula.
Yeah, I think we have to recognize with our teenagers that they are physically, biologically ready to be autonomous, but our society has caused them to emotionally and mentally not be ready for autonomy.
Yeah.
So that's just that is what
it's
it
a real
is. Like we're not going to start. We're not going to be like, well, you know what? My kids can't get married at 15. You know, we're not going to do that. But I think also like we have to recognize that, you know, and I think you've got to do your best to be relational but firm about the truth, you know, and I think it's messy. I think in each kid's different. I mean, you and your daughter, I feel like, have a pretty close relationship. Why don't you tell us?
Yeah.
It's Mother's Week.
How did you make it work, Kelly?
I don't know.
Well, you have three daughters. I meant your older daughter. Sorry. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that we just – I honestly don't know. I ask her a lot of questions, talk a lot. But she's also open with me because I have other kids that are not as open, so you know it's two-sided,
right?
I mean, I think that we just get she's probably the most like my husband too, so that helps because our personalities, whereas my kids that are the most like me, we butt heads a lot.
That's funny.
So you know, and then it's vice versa. So I mean, I think that you just one thing that I've thought about too, it's probably easier for girls and moms that have like similar interests. But I was reading even just on like the social practical level with kids and teenagers, like there are a lot of things that I might not want to do with them because it's not it's not fun for me, you know, but like to try to make sure that you're still building those bonds and relationships, like we might have to do so that they don't want to.
Right.
If we're finding that connections, you know, not there. And so, I don't know. I'm thankful that we do have a good relationship, but it's a lot of
You got to be a researcher with your kids, honestly. You got to find a way to connect with, you know, because it changes. And you have to, and each kid's different. You just got to find. You got to research. You got to try. You got to investigate and do it.
Yeah, that's good.
Tone matters a lot, too, and correction. Seriously, you know, like that's been a big thing over the last year, having a 15-year-old son and 16-year-old son who have a lot of testosterone raging through their body is they start to like, you know, buck up. And finally I've just been like, just very gently, like, well, on this issue, son, I won't say who, you know, it doesn't matter what you think on this issue. Like, you know, versus like, hey, you're going to start like, I'm sorry, I respect your opinion, but in our house, this isn't what's going to happen. And I do think, like, hey, we are a family, and reinforcing that. I mean, I even had to tell a couple of my kids the other day, like, hey, we are a family. If you guys can't start being more of a team, I'm going to intervene.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
That you have to be a on a team more.
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, oh gosh, what's he gonna make us do? You know,
the sharing shirt. You ever do that with your kids? We're like,
I
took one of my t-shirts
our kids
and made
hold
them wear
hands
like,
walking the walking through the neighborhood when they were younger.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And I just think God helps us. And again, having people you can talk to and be like,
yeah.
I told you like, I felt like not as crazy when you would be like, and then I was like, ah! I'm like, Justin was raising his voice at his children.
My kids are like, yeah.
I don't feel like such a failure, you know, like.
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, I feel like we're all in the trenches right now. Yeah, so yeah. I've definitely reached out to other people and be like, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have older children. Yeah. You know, what is this like? And quite honestly.
They laugh at you sometimes, don't they?
Yeah. They're just kind of like, you just get through it. I'm like, yeah. Really? That's your advice? Yeah. You know, but yeah. Seriously, it's kind of like a day by day thing and keeping, you know, God at the center of it, but it's hard.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, it goes back to, you got to keep the end goal in mind. I think as a parent, your end goal, I mean, the end goal as we parent is like, one day I hope that we are friends with our kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you never stop being their parent.
Right.
But that's really not going to be possible if I try to be their buddy and friend when they're 12 and 13, because that teaches them how to manipulate me, because I need their approval and I need things from them. So, you know, I think that's the goal. And so you have to parent with that end in mind. And ultimately, I want them to know more than I want them to be my friend. Like, I want them to be a friend of the Lord, right?
Yeah,
they need
absolutely.
To know Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so that informs direction.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, when they drift from us socially as adults, I'm not there. So it would be better to walk with people who are there. But by being a pastor, I'm aware of many just kind of drifts, and then many serious situations where they have drifted. And I think praying for them, being humble and recognizing they don't have to, if they're following Jesus and it looks a lot different stylistically, that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think probably really beginning in high school, I learned this from a friend named Dan Kendall. He was telling me about his dad.
Oh, I know Dan.
Talking to him. Yeah, I was going to say he's married to some people from a woman from Niceville. Not two people. He's only married to one person. And he said about when he started high school, his dad would just say, "Is that what you think a Christ follower should do?"
Mm-hmm.
And he would let him make the decision. Mm-hmm. You know, and very strict younger childhood.
Yeah.
Then once they got to that age, it's like, "Is that how you think a Christian man should spend his Friday night? Is that?" Mm-hmm. And I do think, like, we
teaching the responsibility.
We do need to ask and realize they may not do what we say and not be personally offended by it.
Yeah.
We did what we have to do. And that's harder. The closer you are, the harder that is.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, that's on them. And you do hope, like, they'll see your love for them.
Right. You know, so. Yeah, that's good. Well, we had a question. So we're going to move on to that. And this kind of comes from the Joshua series that we were doing.
All right, rewind it.
Yeah, so it was, I think, came after the chapter of when God's commanding it, you know, to kill.
Yeah, there's all a few of
the
those.
People, basically.
kind of a thing in Joshua.
All the kings.
Yeah, yeah.
I should remember the count by now, how many times I had to read that. But so whenever we have this absolute like evil, it's like
feet on their necks and
like
them on a tree. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
They took them down by night.
Yeah,
thanks for that.
Sunset. Didn't want to get in the way of the sunset.
Yeah,
they weren't in the back of the Instagram pictures because
definitely no photo bombing.
Probably not funny.
But they okay. So this person's saying, like, I get that these people were absolutely evil and they were depraved, and so that was why God is commanding them to do this. But what did it do to the Israelites personally, like to maybe their psyche, or because we have people whose jobs in the military, like, you know, they're trying to protect us from evil and they're overseas or wherever, and you know, they're having to take people out.
Yeah.
So how do we feel about that when there's loss of life, but it's justified? Maybe how does that impact the
person? This is a really good question. And honestly, I hadn't thought of it. Like, how did it actually affect the Israelites? Mm-hmm. But I think, one, we can only guess, really, because that's not what the scriptures are trying to teach us. So, this is, when I say that, I'm not saying you shouldn't think about it. This is a fine question. So, but we can't look necessarily to scriptures to give us, like, well, this is what it did to them, because we don't fully know. So it is kind of like, where were they in history? What were the influences? What would have been their mentality? And we can't impose necessarily our, you know, 21st century understanding of all this on that. Mm-hmm. So those things being said, you have to imagine it did something. You know, and it, whether it was teaching them like the severity of God's judgment, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And really instilling in them a fear. Mm-hmm. I can't speak with absolute certainty, and you've dived into these passages more so as you've been teaching, and maybe you have something to add. I can't say that they really, we don't really know how they viewed everyone else, these other tribes, other than they probably did not view them in the same terms of humanity that we do now in our culture. I could absolutely be wrong about that. I can't say what it did, but mm-hmm. I know it had to do something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you reinforced your point the more you talk, because the more you talk, it started to be like, okay, where's he going with that? You know,
yes, you do that sometimes. Where am I going? I will land, I yes, promise. Right. I got to explain the thought pattern.
But I think when we start to speculate, we start to speculate, mm-hmm, you know,
exactly.
And potentially get into places that we shouldn't go. And so mm-hmm. I think, yeah, if God wanted us to focus in on that aspect, it would have been revealed to us mm-hmm. in Scripture.
Yeah.
I think it's very nuanced, and I think that you could speak to kind of the whole idea of war in general, and mm-hmm. PhD dissertations and books have been written on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're certainly not going to do that justice right now. I think that a couple talking points that are related but unrelated as well to each other. One is, I do think people struggle more when whether or not it is a just war is debatable. So, like,
yeah,
you can research people who came out of World War II versus people who came out of the Civil War
mm-hmm.
and Vietnam, or even the Gulf War versus the Afghanistan, mm-hmm. the Iraq thing. Because, like, when in the Gulf War, responding to them bombing, you know, and mm-hmm. the weapon, like Saddam Hussein, really, like, mm-hmm. his what he's doing. But then the Afghanistan, like, initially, we kind of got... I don't want to say sidetracked, but it became very complicated and we didn't know what we were really doing. Vietnam, was it really effective? My whole point is, like, I do think that people struggle with this a little less when they say, like, this is a just cause.
Mm-hmm.
This is a just war. So I'll say that piece. Like, and ultimately I would say to, I've preached on this before, like, I would say to guys who are soldiers, like, God isn't actually holding you accountable
mm-hmm.
to that. He's holding the leaders accountable to that.
Yeah.
And that is a big weight.
Yeah.
He is holding you accountable. Like, I've specifically Green Berets who have told me about people they've been with who've killed people they shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. Like, God has, if he sees you just wanting to kill somebody because they have dark skin, mm-hmm. like over there, like that is, mm-hmm. he is holding you accountable for mm-hmm. that. But if you're just carrying out the orders, he's not holding you accountable for
right,
that.
Yeah.
But my whole point then is, I do think there's still, like, even if it is just, there is the psychological effect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just, the Bible really does not mm-hmm. speak to that. Mm-hmm. It speaks to how to care for each other.
Right. Yeah.
So when it comes to Israel, I do think it was very clear. I'm going to remind you that 400 years had passed since mm-hmm. God said the Amorites were evil and I'm going to let their iniquity build. Mm-hmm. It was almost like God was saying, I'm going to make it so clear that these people are bad news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that my justice is completely deserved and you see it. Like, that's, and then we'll be like, well, God executed wrath. Well, the worst thing actually is that God let for, like, the bigger problem is that God let them be evil for mm-hmm. 400 years. Yeah. What happened mm-hmm. to children?
Mm-hmm.
Who were sacrificed? What happened to women and how they were treated for 400 years? Like, that's the greater mm-hmm. philosophical problem.
Right.
Mm. So I think, like, my ultimate answer to the question would be that God probably did what he needed to do for Israel to be as okay with trusting him in that mm-hmm. action.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's a great
but
answer.
That doesn't fully answer the question.
Yeah. Again, yeah. We
yeah.
don't know.
Yeah.
Because even when I started getting the Vietnam versus whatever, people could be like, well, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
No,
and revisionist history is like, but really the Nazis were okay, you know? It's like, they weren't.
No.
Hitler was just misunderstood.
Yeah.
Just misunderstood. Man.
Wow.
Boy.
Seriously.
Somebody's
it is pretty scary. It is crazy.
My pastor said Hitler was just misunderstood.
There's, like, people out there that say that stuff.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And crazy. Like, when I hear that, I'm like, certainly they're just trying to get a reaction. This is a joke. And I'm like, no, they actually are, like, believing this. I can't.
There's some crazy people out there.
Yeah. There are.
Well.
There is?
What'd I say?
I don't know. There are crazy people out there.
There's.
Okay. Grammar's hard sometimes. So next question. What is the difference between a child dedication and baptism?
Water.
So we had it. Yeah.
That's true. That is a difference.
Water.
Water.
That is my answer. Yeah. It really depends. I mean, I could speak to it here at our church because it just depends on how you practice it too, because there are. So we do child dedications. We actually do family dedications, which is, you know, setting the family apart, mom and dad saying we're setting our child apart, and this is a church saying we are supporting you. This isn't just a you parent thing. This is all of us together. We don't practice baptism. We are not, paedo-baptists. We are not baptizing infants. We are credo-baptists, baptizing upon profession of faith. And so really that's the difference. Like, we're not baptizing them into the church.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. I think there are those who practice infant baptism as a means of, like, hey, you're now, like, if this baby died, you're saved. Mm-hmm. That would be a Catholic practice. There's other practices of infant baptism where it is more symbolic, and they would later have a baptism after, usually not a profession of faith, but after confirmation, you know. Mm-hmm. So there would be two baptisms, and the first one would be more of a dedication, but it is still dedicating you baptizing you into the church, which we as Baptists don't baptize people into the church until they have made a profession of faith.
Yeah, it's a way of dealing with original sin. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I think you said church membership. With membership, yeah. You're acknowledging this person is a part of the body of Christ and they're going to heaven. And, you know, we probably all believe that a baby has not transgressed the law, you mm-hmm. know, but we don't think baptizing them is in the Bible, first of all, right. And secondly, does anything about original sin, mm-hmm. you know. So we don't see baptism as a salvific act. We see it as a symbolic act mm-hmm. of salvation. And so I do think you're right. I do think so. From a practicing standpoint, there's a differentiation. Mm-hmm. I do think in a lot of people's minds, there is no differentiation.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, mm-hmm. you know,
really,
I think there are people who are like, this is what you do with your child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We just don't use water.
Like
a christening of, more than an infant baptism. It's more of the christening where, like, we are dedicating our child to the Lord and
we don't want them to go to hell.
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, yeah. There's that mentality for sure. Hmm.
So. All right. So as we're talking about drift, you brought up last week that apologetics can be important, or is it important in drift?
So we're pre-recording this. So what I did was I talked about how people hide behind philosophy, and science, spirituality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just kind of briefly talked about that. I even was like, hey, I'm just quickly explaining this and mm-hmm. explaining why it's not – like it was not doing any of these issues justice. I think that it can be helpful. I think to understand some philosophical arguments about Christianity and against Christianity, to understand a little bit of science, I think those things can be helpful. I think – we don't need to feel so burdened by them unless mm-hmm. we're regularly – come back to our children. Like, mm-hmm. unless that's what people are talking about. And then I do think to become all things to all men, it's like, okay, I want to research these issues more, and I want to be able to have a conversation and really dialogue mm-hmm. about these things. So I think they can be a helpful tool. I think that not so much now, but probably like Josh McDowell days, right?
Yeah, when that was a big deal.
He was walking mm-hmm. around with a big Tommy Hilfiger shirt and – selling books, like back in those days, like I think that people became overly focused mm-hmm. on them. Mm-hmm. And when Paul says the gospel is the power of God for salvation of those who believe.
Yeah.
And so like they would even have those debates and then never actually like explain what is the answer.
Right.
To these
it's about
issues.
The debate itself more than.
So, yeah, I mean, it's,
yeah. there it's important. It's good to know why you believe and how to like defend it. But I do think there is an element of apologetics where people get maybe even too aggressive, or
that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, where they're just like adamant.
So you're saying you're a liar. You're saying you're a liar. Who's the guy? Ray Comfort. Ray Comfort. Yeah.
Yeah,
Ray Comfort. Yeah. I haven't thought about him.
And like you said, I mean, I remember in seminary we had to attend, like, and they set it up like it was, you know, debates,
which
is interesting. Mm-hmm. But even in the apologetics piece of it, they never really got to like what is the hope. And there was one about creation and, you know, Darwinism, and you know, it was interesting to hear the point counterpoint back and forth exchange. It's actually really good learning experience. But there never was a why do you do this explanation at the end. So yeah,
yeah, okay.
Well, what do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, I went to a school that we had an apologetics class, and that was the whole, like, you had a topic and you had to debate it. But, I mean, we were all teenagers then. There are some people that could debate very well, mm-hmm. so they were you know, blue in the face, and they said all the things, mm-hmm. but did their life reflect any of that? No, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah,
so
that's
my
whole
thing.
I remember,
just like...
Like, I was 21. I had just kind of been like, hey, I'm going to be in ministry. I was still in Jacksonville, kind of making the transition. And we went to a debate. It was Kent Hovind. And and some teacher at UNF. I didn't have him, but he was a professor at UNF. Like, and so this guy,
the creation guy, right?
Yeah, this guy just comes in for like the night. But this other guy, like, lives amongst these students and professors. Mm-hmm. And I would say Kent won the debate if you were giving that. But he was such a jerk.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about it. He might be a great guy. He might not be like that anymore. I really don't know much about him.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, like, I should not be walking away from this thinking, man, the atheist professor sure was nicer than the other guy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you can't, like, have healthy, but, like, just he was demeaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just proof that you can have all the knowledge, but change your heart. And so you need both.
Agreed. Apologetics, good. Jerkiness, bad. There you go.
That's a great note to end on, isn't
it? There you go.
Well, there's your answer, guys. So, glad we had that clear.
Bringing it home.
Great answers, right?
Yes, thank you, guys.
That's right.
His first answer, we don't know what they felt. Water's the difference. And apologetics good, jerkiness
bad. Trying to keep things
simple.
Glad I know this. Check, check, check. All right, we got it down. Well, if you have any other questions that you need a great, simple answer to, then you can email me at kelly@churchonbayshore.org. And thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.